And have you guys had a thought about a title for this?
An elitist bastard and his flunky go to the movies. Ken Hagee, the film critic for the Mountain Express.
And I'm Justin Souther, the other film critic with the Mountain Express. We're here at the Critics Lounge at the Fine Arts Theater in downtown Asheville. And we're going to talk about movies, I think.
We're not talking about movies, I'm in trouble.
Probably. You can talk about the Beatles.
That's true.
So,
you want to talk about the Beatles instead of movies?
Maybe later. We should probably talk about movies first.
All right.
Yes, I did see Babies. This week was what I reviewed. It's a French documentary about babies.
And well, that's exciting.
I don't even know if it's really about babies. It's just showing babies doing baby-like things.
You make it sound like the wallet full of pictures from hell.
Yes, well, I did have the distinct feeling after I got out of it that I had just spent 120 minutes.
It's watching 79.
Yes. No way. Like an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I thought maybe it seemed like
yes.
120.
No, it didn't seem that long, but it did seem like I was watching some stranger's home movies, which is a very unexciting proposition for me, I think.
I think I could take it, you know, even further than that, but of course,
right.
Now you understand why. You got to see Babies, and
yes,
I got to see
of course.
Something else, yes.
But it's, I don't know. I can't say I enjoyed Babies, but I didn't hate it. I think it's an impossible movie to, like, actively dislike.
Unless, of course, you actively dislike Babies.
Right.
And even if you do, you can't tell people that.
No. Everybody else seemed to be enjoying themselves in the audience. There was lots of giggling at how cute they were, but to me, I don't. They're babies.
Well, you don't really strike me as a baby person. So.
No. Unless they're related to me. I really don't. Well, the film is structured as they have four different babies from around the world. There's a French... No, there's not a French baby.
Which is kind of odd, actually.
Yes. There's an American baby, a Japanese baby, a Mongolian baby, and an African baby. And the film basically follows them from, a few of them from right when they're born to their first steps. And various...
So you've got about a year's worth of babies crammed into this.
I heard a year, but I don't know if it's... I guess it depends on how long it takes a baby to learn to walk. I don't know.
I've actually had a child. I ought to be able to remember this, but even that was considerable while ago.
Right.
So.
But it's just... And then in the interim, it's babies doing baby things. I mean, that's really the entire movie. I'm sort of fascinated that they could get that into theaters.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I'm almost surprised nobody's thought of it before. But
well, that's what it, you know. I mean, then that's what it usually. You have to be the first person to think of something like that,
right?
Because now you know nobody else is going to be able to do
well,
that.
Well, now we're going to be stuck with puppies and kittens and baby giraffe movies. I'm sure. Depending on how well this does.
I kind of like the idea of baby wallaby movies.
Okay. You're on a wallaby kick lately.
Yeah, well...
Wallaby stampedes.
Well, wallaby stampedes. Well, that's... You know, that's because the filmmaker in question
right.
lives in Australia, and he didn't have right. access to monkeys for a monkey stampede. So right. I suggested that wallabies might be an acceptable
okay.
placement.
That's fair. I gave it a 3.5, which I guess we can explain a little our star rating thinking.
Yes.
That gets asked a lot, so this would be a good chance.
Well, you need to specify, since some people use 10-star ratings and some people use 4-star ratings,
right.
that we're working on a 5-star.
Yes.
Maximum.
And usually 3.5 is like the bottom of what we consider good.
Yeah, right? To me, if it's 3.5, it's... okay, and it's not going to harm you, and it might even be worth your while, but it's not great.
And a lot of times they're just kind of pleasant. And
yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's, anything below that's usually not good.
Yeah,
below, it's just different degrees
yeah, but
of not
below,
good.
Below 3.5 to me is kind of like, no, don't go see this movie.
Right.
You know, if you suppose, you know, there could be extenuating circumstances, but in general, don't go see anything that we give less than 3.5 to.
Right.
And 4 means we think it's really good. 4.5 means we think it's real close to hitting the gong. And 5 is the, you know, the virtually nothing is wrong with this movie.
And a lot of times you'll find us with a lot of, like on our top 10 lists, we'll end up with a lot of 4.5 stuff.
Yeah, a lot of times movies that we originally gave 4.5 after seeing them a second time will end up on our best list, and something that we gave 5 stars will not end up on the best of the year.
Or even that, whatever that thing is that leaves it, loses it, that half star even sort of appeals to us on occasion.
Yeah.
The things that make it not quite work.
Yeah,
there's a lot of movies like that.
There are definitely a lot of movies that don't quite work, but they're so close, and there is actually kind of an appeal to them not being perfect.
Right.
To the degree that there is such a thing as a perfect movie, which there is no such thing.
So Babies, it's 3.5.
Better you than me.
Yes. I can't really say, I don't know, I know maybe a few people I would recommend it to, but it's not something that's painful. I think you just have to have the right disposition of wanting to watch Babies for 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Ending it with a monkey stampede would have definitely improved it, I'm sure.
Right.
But ending anything with a monkey stampede will improve it.
That's true.
That's my basic law of film. That all movies should end with a monkey stampede.
But I can't think of anything.
You just imagine how much better Gone with the Wind would be with a monkey stampede ending. And she won't get a chance to think about it tomorrow with Tara. Vincere. Vincere is a fascinating film. It's a film that I actually did not want to see. I did not want to watch. I'd had a screener. For this film for, well, I guess it was 2 days before I actually got around to sitting through it, forcing myself to sit through it. I mean, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you want to watch a 129 million minute Italian movie on Mussolini's first wife, what's your reaction going to be? It's going to be pretty much, I need to, you know, sort my sock drawer. This sounds awful. And yet the movie is nothing like that. It's a very heavily stylistic thing. It's very stylized. It's really about this woman's obsession with Mussolini. The Mussolini as a character disappears at about the third mark when he rejects her and gets married and starts becoming the Mussolini we all know and know the caricature of. And we only ever see him after that in newsreel footage, which is the only way she ever sees him. And in fact, a lot of the movie involves people watching movies. And it comes down to, she's not really in love with or obsessed with Mussolini. She's obsessed with her image. Everything's about the image. And it's kind of broadly assumed that you are going to read this in such a way that this is the way the entire country is. They aren't obsessed with Mussolini. They don't think Mussolini is some sort of great savior. They have this projected image, or the image that he's projected of himself, and that's what they're all agog over, not the real man. Which he himself, early in the film, is watching a 1917 Italian Life of Christ movie, and it's very obvious from the way that's done that he's viewing himself as the character on the screen. He is the savior of Italy. It's a very complex film. The only thing that I would say is a downside to it is that being 129 minutes long, the film seems to think that sequences of her mental disintegration over the years are more riveting than I did by the end of the film. But overall, it was, you know, one of the more unusual and striking films that I've seen this year.
Has that director done anything else?
He was a big noise sometime in the, he goes back a good ways. I was completely unfamiliar with his work. It was not somebody that had ever crossed my particular realm of Italian cinema, which is, my Italian cinema is certainly stronger than my Asian cinema, but it's not by any stretch of the imagination all-encompassing. I ended up giving Vincere a 4.5, which could grow to a 5 after I have lived with the film for a while. It lost a half star simply by virtue of the fact that, like I said, the first wife, if she was a wife, that's even open to question. The drama of her in the insane asylums over the years and the various things just kind of got a little old for me after a while. But every time I would think it was getting really, oh, this is kind of tedious, there would be some amazing composition or something very striking or a juxtaposition that I wasn't expecting, and I would be completely pulled back into the film again. Iron Man 2, I thought, was that rarest of things, a sequel that is better than the original film. It's easily the best action film to come out this year, which of course is saying absolutely nothing. What is it up against? Clash of the Titans? But the really weird thing to me is that it is also the best romantic comedy I've seen this year. Again, what is it up against? The Bounty Hunter? The Backup Plan? I mean, it's not like there's a lot of competition out there. Leap Year, the movie that proves that putting Amy Adams in something does not guarantee it will be watchable. I mean, this is, you know, there's not much out there. But the chemistry and the banter back and forth between Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow is like classic Hollywood interplay. I mean, they really come across as genuine and clever and people that are fun to be watching. And I'm not getting that out of the current crop of romantic comedies. The villain, Mickey Rourke, is an excellent villain. Being that he's Mickey Rourke, he's over the top, but he's still enough that he's disturbingly sinister. Sam Rockwell makes a great subordinate villain, partly because he's someone that you feel like mocking because he's really pretty dumb, but at the same time, he's that very dumbness translates into meanness. And so there's something very unsettling about him. Samuel L. Jackson, of course, is Samuel L. Jackson. And, you know, we forgive him every bad movie he's ever been in because he's Samuel L. Jackson.
Before seeing the movie, we had talked about how you were concerned there might be too many characters being introduced in this one. Did you have an issue with that?
I really didn't have an issue with that. I will admit that Scarlett Johansson does not have a great deal to do. But what she does very well. She does have a couple of very good scenes. I didn't feel like she was pigeon... You know, there's nothing like she had been shoved into this. Her presence in the film seemed perfectly natural. It was simply that it's a big-name star in what is essentially a small role.
Right.
My only real complaint with the film, and this is not uncommon, although it's this one manages to make it seem kind of uncommon because it is so, it goes so long. It goes for, probably the first third of the film. Very assured, fast, I mean, it just moves along at a breathless pace. And then all of a sudden, we get into dealing more with, I guess you would call it the plot. And the plot is good, the plot's fine. But all of a sudden it just slows down, and it's got a period of about 20 minutes in there that feels very, not slow, but it feels slow by comparison with the first part of the film. However, it's got a good climax, which is something that the first film badly needed. This one really seems justified, and it doesn't just... The first film, like, it runs along for a while, and it's just fine, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody goes, oh, God! We need to end this. We got to do something. So it just comes out of your climax comes out of nowhere, which is not desirable under almost any circumstance. Iron Man 2, I gave a 4.5. Unlike Vincere, which I also gave 4.5, I do not see it ever becoming a 5. Vincere, I could see actually becoming a 5 and ending up on my best of the year list. Iron Man. Right now, it would be on my best of the year list, but the year is not, you know, we're in May, and while there has been some choice items, there haven't been, well, if I had to do a best of list right now, I would be okay with Shutter Island, The Ghost Rider, Mother, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and I'm out. Am I forgetting something?
I don't think, I would have Book of Eli on mine, but you haven't seen that.
I haven't seen Book of Eli, so I can't.
So... But I think that's
That's
Bad Lieutenant?
No, probably not.
Okay.
To me, that was more a lot of really disturbed fun than it was really actually good.
Well, Ken and I have started doing horror nights,
which we call the
Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Right.
At the Carolina Asheville in Hendersonville Road. Which used to be the old Hollywood.
But it's been completely revamped. And what used to be their old game room is now a very nice screening room with really state-of-the-art video projection and surround sound. And
Couches.
And
there's food and beer.
The only problem with it is that we are rapidly outgrowing it because this has proved to be more popular than anybody had anticipated.
Right.
And the first week we ran out of couches, and then we ran out of chairs, then we ran out of bar stools, and fortunately we didn't run out of floor.
No.
But I think we only had about 3 people actually sitting in the floor. But we have brought in reinforcement seating. And we haven't had that problem again.
This week, which is our fourth week.
Our fourth week.
We're running William Peter Blatty's Exorcist 3, which I know you hold this opinion and I hold this opinion. Probably not very many other people hold this opinion, but we both feel
I think
that
there are more of us than we realize.
Okay. We both think that this is better than the original Exorcist.
Oh, by leaps and bounds. Yes. I think it is vastly superior. It's scarier. It's funnier. It's intentionally funnier. It's
yes.
not... I mean, it has some really good dialogue
right.
between Ed Flanders and George C. Scott.
Much more stylish filmmaking.
Yes, it's much more stylish. The effects are better.
Mm-hmm.
And...
better acted?
Better acted, I think, in general. I mean, George
C. Scott,
I think,
is... It's sort of like a classier... more intelligent.
Yeah, I know, which is sort of funny because it probably had less money spent on it.
Right. Got Fabio and Patrick Ewing as angels. I think that's...
And Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, is he? Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
He's the old man sitting there. I think his voice is dubbed, though. I don't think it's his voice.
Okay.
There's a bizarre... For anyone who's never seen the film, there's a very bizarre heaven fantasy sequence with Tommy Dorsey's orchestra playing Song of India and... a Patrick Ewing angel and
a Fabio
angel. They all have big fluffy wings and everything. And then you have other people in there who have had their heads cut off, but they've been sewed back on rather poorly. It's a very strange...
That's one of the things I'm trying to sell people on, the Fabio angel.
The Fabio angel. Yeah, that is sort of
it's
a...
It's that, and I don't want to go into it because I don't want to ruin it, but that one...
The nurse's station scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to... explain too much of that, but it's
finest great. Absolute finest shock effect sequence ever, I think.
Yeah.
I actually
easily.
I believe it actually does outdo the end of Carrie.
Yeah.
And
either one
was,
of those I'm fine with, but
you know, but the end of Carrie for a long time was the benchmark for shock effects. And I was there in 76 when Carrie came out, and yes, you saw an entire audience levitate when the hand came out. And I was actually there again in 90, which was a smaller audience for Exorcist 3. And in the case of this, which I'm not going to say any more about exactly what happens, yes, everybody jumped. And of course, as you're supposed to do after that, everybody kind of laughs at themselves for having been...
I think that's what I'm looking forward to the
suckered.
Most is how that scene works.
I can hardly wait to see Brian.
Well...
Well, we have a friend who is a sucker for a shock effect, and he is like, it's great fun to sit with him at a horror movie because all it takes is a loud noise and he jumps, and it just it increases your enjoyment of the overall experience.
Yes.
Oh, and we should make note of the fact that this week in the pre-show we have been showing trailers, and last week we showed a Laurel and Hardy short and a Betty Boop cartoon. And this week in the pre-show material, which probably will start about 7:40, the film itself starts at 8, we're going to have chapter 1 of the 15 thrilling chapters of The Return of Chandu with Bela Lugosi, a 1934 serial. I'm only going to say that they claim it's 15 thrilling chapters. There have of the 15, there might be two that would actually qualify as thrilling, but...
You have to come and see which ones.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you which ones. No, you've got to actually come to all 15 and then showings, you can decide. And then you can tell me which ones were the thrilling ones.
No, we guarantee two of them will be thrilling.
Yes. You will definitely be thrilled by two of them, but you have to see all 15.
Yes. Because we don't want you getting thrilled by the wrong ones.
No, if you get thrilled by the wrong one, then, you know, there must be some sort of substantial penalty. But I don't know what it will be.
We have 15 weeks to figure that out.
That's true. We'll be working on the penalty in the meanwhile. Well, let's see. Robin Hood opens this Friday. Am I the only person who just really doesn't care? I mean, it's Robin Hood. I'm sure it's going to be different than Douglas Fairbanks Sr. or Errol Flynn, or hopefully different than Kevin Costner.
Or Cary Elwes.
But the question in my mind is does anybody really want a Robin Hood movie? I mean, I just have not. I'm sure they're out there, but I have not met anybody that has seen the poster or seen a trailer and gone, wow, I can't wait for Robin Hood. I've been waiting for a new Robin Hood movie. I didn't hear that anywhere.
I remember Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I guess that was really the last major Robin Hood film, but that was a good...
That was 91 or somewhere around there, yeah.
So there is a good chunk of kids with disposable income, I guess, that haven't seen a Robin Hood film.
Yeah, and I guess there's still a little bit of the gladiator gleam to the idea of Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe.
Right.
By people who never had to sit through a good year, the film they made in between these two.
I'm still not convinced how big a draw Ridley Scott is these days, but I guess he still has the name... That Leonardo DiCaprio thing didn't do anything
It always depends, you know, on who you're talking to. There, people tend to, Ridley Scott peaked with Alien, and that's 1979. Or alternatively, you've got Ridley Scott peaked with Blade Runner.
And then I guess there's,
There's a Gladiator fan base, but I've never heard anybody try and make a really serious argument for Ridley Scott based on Gladiator. Myself, I always liked his Chanel commercial. I thought that was really good. It had the ink spots on the soundtrack singing, "I don't want to set the world on fire." You know, the ink spots probably what sold me, but...
You think there'll be ink spots on the Robin Hood soundtrack?
No. Okay. And that's probably unfortunate. Just Right.
Starring Queen Latifah.
Mm-hmm. And Common.
And that other young lady, I can't remember.
Paula Patton, the girl from Idlewild, yes. Looks like generic romantic comedy to me. I will usually forgive Queen Latifah most anything.
Paula Patton's good.
Paula Patton is good. What have I seen Common in?
Date Night would be the most recent thing.
Oh, okay.
And... Okay. Other things that aren't...
I'm afraid my knowledge of rappers is on the limited side, so right. That's sort of a stumbling block for me there. But the woman who'd made the film made a very interesting little film called Something New a few years ago, which was much better than most romantic comedy. Right. So maybe the trailer looks okay.
Yeah. It looks painless.
I think
it has, the trailer at least, and this will tie into the film, has the same issue. Not quite as bad as Letters to Juliet, the other.
Yeah, but I think the difference in between this and another film that's opening this week, which we'll get to next, is that this is clearly a formula picture.
Right.
And this Letters to Juliet film, which also opens on Friday... pretends not to be a formula picture, and then they've got this cast. They've got Vanessa Redgrave and Amanda. How do you pronounce her last name? Seyfried. I don't know. And you've got Gael Garcia Bernal, and you've got Franco Nero and some twink I never heard of playing the girl that it's the girl playing the guy that obviously. She's going to throw a Bernal over for before the end of the film. And there's the problem with this thing. There's a 2.5 minute trailer. This 2.5 minute trailer tells you absolutely the entire film.
I think it even shows the climax, I'm pretty sure.
It wouldn't surprise me. It is perhaps the worst trailer I have ever seen for, wow, I don't feel like I need to see the movie now. But one of us is going to. Oh, there's also the little Italian comedy, Mid-August Lunch, that's opening at the Fine Arts on Friday. It's not exactly expected to be a world beater. It's a small film. It's only 75 minutes long. The reviews have been very strong on it.
Wonderful tagline.
Yeah, well, it's
a comedy by the makers of Gomorrah.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, for anybody who has seen or even knows what Gomorrah is, the idea that a comedy by the makers of Gomorrah, this is like having a comedy show sponsored by a funeral parlor. It's the most incongruous idea for a selling point I can imagine. I mean, Gomorrah is this violent gangster drama, and so why you would want to promote your...
There is some funny stuff in it, so okay, I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibilities.
No, but I mean, but why would you want to promote your...
But the funny stuff is like two teenage gangsters and tighty whities shooting off automatic weapons. So I doubt it's going to be that kind of humor. So
we could but hope.
That's true.
That's kind of like my hopes, which I know will be thwarted for Letters to Juliet, is that we're going to find out when she meets her lost love of 50 years ago that he is in fact a serial killer and there are hundreds of bodies buried in his vineyards.
I kind of doubt that's going to happen.
I do too. But it would almost beat a monkey stampede. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Ken Hankey, and
I'm Justin Souther. And we're, I'm assuming, I guess, we're two elitist bastards going to the movies on occasion. I'm not, that's probably too long for a title. But.